Where's my pals at AGP?
Because we're going to have people who are not here.
I'd like to get started, please. It's hurt. Come on. We're hurting cats here this evening, as they say. I'd like to call this meeting of the June 6, 2006 regular board meeting for the San Luis Coastal Unified School District to order. I'm Chris Unger, and I'm clerk of the board. Mrs. Andreen will be here a little bit later. She's at San Luis High School. Her daughter is receiving an award for community service this evening, so we would congratulate her on that. Before I do anything else, I'd like to introduce somebody that's here this evening. We had a special board meeting last week at Los Osos Middle School where we voted to appoint a new board member to take Mrs. Andreen's place. And I'd like to introduce him this evening. He's got to run off. He's got to get to an event with his child. So our new board member is David Peter from Morro Bay. And so, David, we welcome you. David will take the oath of office after Mrs. Andreen's resignation be one. The board also discussed negotiations with California School Employees Association, the Management Educators Council, San Luis Coastal Teachers Association, and the confidential, did I mention confidential employees? There we go, I think that's it. We also did touch upon the service employee SEIU. We did also discuss status of negotiations with contractual employees. That's the Assistant Superintendent of Business, Assistant Superintendent of Educational Services, and the Superintendent. I would ask if the board would like to come to consensus on the order of business. Everybody okay with that? Okay. And I would also announce that Mrs. Dickinson is not here this evening. Mrs. Dickinson has broken her hip, we believe, and so she's been ordered by her doctor to take a rest, and so we wish her well and a speedy recovery. I would entertain a motion for approval of the minutes, please. Moved by Mr. Spatafor.
There's three sets, actually.
So. Three sets of minutes. Okay, well, let's get to those.
Let me move all three, John?
Yeah. All three, okay. Those would be May 9th, May 16th, and May 30th, and that's been seconded by Mrs. Roger.
Chris, I'd like to vote on the one on May 9th and May 16th. I'm going to abstain.
Okay.
But I will vote on the May 30th.
Okay, very good. Well, you know what? Then I'm going to, if it's okay with the board, I will take those. Could I take those as separate motions, please, with the board's approval, and we'll go with the maker and the second on that. So, all in favor of the meeting, the minutes of May 9th. Say aye, please.
Aye.
Okay.
I'm going to go ahead and vote, even though I wasn't present, because if I abstain, you don't have a quorum.
Ah, okay. May 16th meeting. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Abstentions? Abstentions?
You're abstaining on May 16th.
I'm abstaining.
Mrs. Botwin. The motion on the board meeting, the minutes of May 30th. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? No one. Carries 5-0. Okay. Let's move on to our presentations to student recognitions. And Dr. Matakovich.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Unger. It's with pleasure that test. Laguna Middle School's teams took third place in California out of 39 out of 806 schools internationally. We had a seventh grade team and an eighth grade team. And if I may, I'd like to read the names of those students. Anna Costello, Max Count, Matt Faria, Michael Hansen, Spencer Le...
I'm sorry, Mary, we have a correction from the peanut gallery.
Thank you, Faria. Matt, excuse me. So Michael Hansen, Spencer Lemon, Nathan Nakamura, Shelby Norman, Serena Ruggles, Emily Tomac, and Sarah Worrell. So that is our seventh grade team.
Excuse me, Mary, are any of those students present?
I don't see any of our middle school students here tonight.
Okay, thank you. I thought we'd stand up and give them a round of applause.
We appreciate that. Our eighth grade team consisted of Sarah Alford, Sarah Appleton, Tyler Davis, Bethany Donaldson, Danielle Dong, Catherine Duberg, Christian Gaia, Kelsey Gibbs, Danielle Kramer, Elisa Monceso, Sean McNulty, Rhea Powell, Shelby Patty, Simon Phillips, Alex Texter, and Joseph Zachariah. So that is our eighth grade team from Laguna Middle School. Also, we would like to recognize the Los Osos Middle School award winners. Tonight, Los Osos Middle School has scheduled their awards evening, so none of the staff nor the students will be present tonight. But we'd like to recognize the work of Ruth Martin, who is the teacher who led the Math Counts group. Their third place team consisted of Thayer Birch, Michelle Garcia, Gordon Kirby, and Quinn Weber. They took third place in the state. For individual competitions, trophies were given to the top 18 students in the state. So students, Quinn did it again. So we have Mr. Pete Zodovich here tonight from Morro Bay High School to announce his students who have received awards. Mr. Zodovich.
Thank you, Dr. Matakovich, and thank you, Board, very much for this opportunity for our students to come forth and to meet with you. Tonight, I've brought a few of my teachers with me. They're going to introduce the students. They're the ones that have done the fabulous hard work with them. And first, I'd like to have Don Rupucci come up. He's going to talk about Skills USA and the Ford Troubleshooting State competition. Don?
Thank you very much. Skills USA is an international organization that supports technical and industry in the high school levels. And this is the first year Morro Bay High School has participated in Skills USA. I have several of my students here that have won either national or state level recognition. And I would like to call them and have them stand if we could. Cassie Bruner in drafting. Dana Wilkin in welding. Robert Frazier in computer repair. Ian Eckert in computer repair. And our national winner, or not national winner, we're hoping is a national winner, in June 18th, Jason Dornish will be going to Kansas City, Missouri for national competition. Jason, in computer repair. Thank you.
Next are FHA Hero State winners and competitors, and our teacher, Linda Falkenstein. Linda?
Good evening. FHA Hero is a state national leadership organization for young men and women who are in home economics classes. And this year I was fortunate to be able to take, well, six students qualified for the state competition. Only five were able to go. And unfortunately tonight they are either working or studying for finals coming up. So I would like to read their names to have them recognized. We had Maggie Baez and Drew Dawkins competing in community service projects this year. One, they worked to get the funds in order to provide gifts for the children of a family at the holiday time and made them a very nice Christmas. And the other was they made homemade lasagna and prepared an entire meal for the Prado Road Day Center this spring and fed 96 people their lunch. So thank you for your support.
Next, I'd like to introduce Linda Todd, who's going to talk about our FFA program. Linda?
Good evening. FFA, we've been before you several times, and you have a list of some of the partial accomplishments of the students this year. The FFA offers four degree levels. They have the green hand degree. You kind of get that just by being in the FFA. It's kind of a give you. You're here, you're a green hand member. Chapter degree, they have to put a little more effort into FFA, into their ag-related job or project. State degree is one level up. That's the highest degree that the state can confer on an FFA member. And then the American FFA degree. We had seven students this year receive the state FFA degree. That's the largest we've ever had in a single year. They just did an outstanding job. The American FFA degree, there are almost 500,000 FFA members nationwide, and 0.5% annually get the American degree. We had three recipients this past end of October in Louisville, Kentucky. And we've had numerous, you have a list also of our competitive teams that were on the road this year. They consisted of the Farm Power team. They ended up 15th in the state, which isn't the best out of 35 teams. It's hard for a coast team to compete when they go over there and see equipment that they've never seen being used. They have to be able to identify parts on different farm implements, drive tractors, troubleshoot, things like that. And they did a really good job and put in a lot of effort. The specialty animal judging team placed 7th out of the state. They are required to identify surgical instruments, veterinary surgical instruments that are used, grooming instruments, breeds of animals, and judge rabbits. And they placed 7th place. This year out of the state. The Parley Pro, we have advanced and novice. First year we've had a novice Parley Pro team competing. They made it, they have qualifying induction and a resume, and then they go through an interview process. And we had three people that competed at that. That one, again, is a qualifying one. We had one member, Kelly Siphon, was her first year. She's a junior, but it was her first year of being in this competition, that placed 2nd at the section. There are 6 sections in our region. Each section sent their top 4 to the regional competition. So we had 24 competitors at the regional level. She was 2nd place there. And we didn't make it to the finals at state competition, but she learned a lot, and she's only a junior, so she'll be back next year. So we're wishing her well on that. And I was before you 2 years ago almost with a national finalist in proficiency, and Jason Bates, who went on to be 2nd place in the nation. We keep your fingers crossed for us. Good luck. We have a state winner who's here with me, Ryan Duclos, proficiency. There are 43 different proficiency areas this year, and he is the state winner in the small animal production and care area for placement for the jobs and volunteering that he's done over the years. He has, help me with the hours, I don't remember. Almost 2,000 hours of either paid or volunteer over his high school career, and almost $9,000 that he's earned in this proficiency area. And we've just sent in last week his national application and won't hear for about 2 months. So we're going to be on pins and needles for 2 months to see if he will be a national finalist in that area. But we're very proud of him and hoping that we'll make a trip to Indianapolis this year for him. So a little bit of what we're doing.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Lastly, about this time last year, 6 Morro Bay High School students that took the PSAT test just a few months earlier qualified to be in the National Merit finalist. And out of 1.3 million students in the United States, 60,000 were chosen. I have the honor to tell you tonight that one of those students, Shane Wilwan, is a National Merit Scholar. He will be going to UC Berkeley. He will be receiving scholarship money each year. And this is just a fabulous student that I want you to know about. He has an unbelievable personality. He is loved by the entire student body. He works very, very hard in his academics, and yet he's just a good, all-around, nice student to be with.
Karen Lopez is here tonight for Pacific Beach. Karen, please.
I'd like to also thank you for this opportunity. We have several individual students that we have listed before you that have had a good year and brought some individual recognition to Pacific Beach High School. They also are all at their job sites tonight, so they are not here to be with us, but I would like to share with you their names and what they are being recognized for. One is Simone Fouquet, who you know from as the board representative. We had the opportunity, because of being chosen a model school this year, to enter a student essay in a competition. And Simone's essay was chosen, and she was the first place winner for the district that we belong to for the California Continuation Education Association. So we're proud of her for that award that she's won. We also, for the first time this year, had a student chosen to participate in RILA, which is the Rotary Youth Leadership Awards Leadership Program. And that's Aaron Castorina. And again, he's working tonight, but he had a great experience there and came back and wrote it up in many, many pages worth of experience. And I'd like to introduce to you tonight Melissa Newman, who is a teacher at Pacific Beach High School, and she might be able to share a little bit more about Aaron's experience in RILA, but she's also going to share with you the individual winners that we had this year in our mock trial participation.
Hello. Aaron Castorina's paper that he wrote, the RILA experience, I think, is 4 days. And he was there, had a wonderful time. And I said, what happened? I've never heard about that before because we've never sent a student. He wrote 20 pages, single-spaced, about his experience. It's a fabulous read, and I'd be very excited to share that with any board member who's interested in a really very, very well-written, I think, conversational piece about his experience there. As far as mock trial goes, we had three students who were recognized, honorable mention. Simone Fouquet was a double winner, one as a pre-trial attorney. She was recognized, did a fabulous job, and also as a defense our attorney coaches, so we thank him for that.
And Mr. Jones, San Luis High School, please.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Will Jones, principal of San Luis Obispo High School, and congratulations to all the students and the staff from the other schools who had the opportunity to be recognized tonight. This is an exciting night for San Luis Obispo High School. Mrs. Andrine and I just raced each other over here from our Community Service Award presentation down at the City County Library, where I had the pleasure of recognizing 51 students this year who earned 80 hours of community service, and they are right now being honored by the City Council as we speak. So it's a pleasure to be here and to recognize other students who have excelled this year. So first of all, I would like to introduce Anna Bates, who is a member of our Agriculture Department and is the advisor for FFA and also the advisor for our state champions in the Novice Parliamentary Procedure category. Anna?
Good evening. Thank you for having us here tonight. I'm not going to talk very much. I'm going to let them go ahead and explain why they're here, and they definitely should receive great recognition. And I know it's hard for all of you to know what a parliamentary procedure team does, but basically, as we walked in, you guys were passing the minutes, and they all looked up and completely understand what's going on, and they can do it officially, formally, and very quickly, and debate about things in 10 minutes, and probably can speak a lot better than I can in certain instances. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to them, and they're going to explain kind of what they got recognized for this year.
Good evening. I'm going to introduce our novice Parley Pro team. We have the President, Alyssa Nushi, Secretary, Jenna Rakovich, and then we have the four debaters, Shelby Tritt, Aaron Flores, Caitlin Lewis, who isn't here, and myself, Aubrey Whitaker.
Parliamentary procedure is a system of rules that are
system of rules used to conduct business in an orderly fashion. It follows the will of the majority while protecting the rights of the minority.
At San Luis Obispo High School, we have two parliamentary procedure teams. We have an advanced and a novice. The novice team is freshmen and sophomores who...
...and four debates, and we have to complete everything within 10 minutes and 30 seconds.
Good evening. My name is Jenna Ratkovich. I'm going to tell you about Fresno State Convention. Fresno State Convention is held up in Fresno, and it's FFA. It's our huge convention of the year that we all go. There were about 50 parliamentary procedure teams competing, and you have to qualify to get there through section and region. It was a great experience. They have many leadership conferences and general sessions in which we talk about the FFA, and then we have workshops there. And throughout our competitions, we worked very, very hard as a team, and we had our wonderful coach who, with her wisdom, inspired us to work very hard and succeed in what we did. We had all second places up until state convention, in which we did so well, and we took first place. And I want to thank you very much for honoring us before the school board, and we are so grateful to be here.
I always feel as if I have to sharpen my presentation skills after I follow the FFA speakers. They're so excellent. Next, I would like to introduce the advisor for both our Skills USA automotive competition team and also for our Ford troubleshooters, AAA troubleshooters team, and that's Jeff Lemkuhl, who is going to present students who excelled in both of those areas this year. So, Jeff, if you can come on up with your students.
Thank you very much for having us tonight. Why did we have to go after them? They were great, weren't they? They were just great. I'm here just representing both our Skills USA competition students, two of which I have with me, Daniel Lemkuhl and Diana Fleener. Eric Tracy is the other student. He's at a choir concert tonight at the PAC. Eric placed first at the state competition in Riverside in April. Diana was second, and Daniel was third. And in the automotive service technology category, which for us, this is the first time we've ever, we've placed in the top three once before, Meredith Schmidt a few years ago, some of you remember. But this is the first time we've actually had a first place. And so Eric will be going to Kansas City in about 2 weeks to represent the state of California. He's the one and only student representing the state of California in Kansas City for automotive service technology. So it's quite an honor. I'll be accompanying him, and we're grateful for the school district's support because we've had tremendous support for that whole trip contest. But we did really well. So thank you for your support, and these guys have done a great job. DJ Kingma and Eric Tracy were the two students for the Ford AAA troubleshooting contest. And again, Eric's at choir, and I don't know where DJ is. He said he'd be here, so thank you very much. Thank you.
Next, I would like to introduce Lisa Washmuth, who was the advisor for our FHA Hero team, and we had some excellent results at their state competition this year, so please ask Lisa to come forward.
Hi, I'm Lisa Washmuth from San Luis High School, and Will, thank you for not having me go after FFA. We had four students that were eligible to go to our state competition, and three students went. One student competed in salad prep.
That's salad prep.
We had a misunderstanding at a staff meeting one time, so I'm ragging him about that. And just to explain what that is, those are people that are working in restaurants that are doing all the chopping, getting all of the ingredients together to go into a salad. And you will see people doing that type of thing on, like, the Food Network. And then I had also a student that, Jessica Milton, who was competing in fashion design, and a student, Nicole Dietrich, competing in interior design. They're winning boards and trophies are over there. We are carting them everywhere. We are so proud to have brought them home. I think I screamed louder than anybody. Our state meeting was in Fresno at the end of April, beginning of May. You can't tell actually all the work that goes into that. The students in both those design competitions have to go over all the elements and principles of design that went into their designs, and they also have to present these to a panel of judges and give an oral presentation. Both students did very well, and there was a tattoo convention going on at the same time with a live band, so I think overall they did excellently well. And no one came home with a tattoo. Jessica Milton won second place in fashion design. The competition is really...
Is there anybody for the Latin Club tonight, Will?
Dr. Jackovich was giving me the roll-on sign here. So not only do we have some very successful students, but they're also quite modest sometimes. And I want to thank Tom Weinschenk for all the work he does with the Latin Club and his two students, Kushbu Goyal and Asali Eccles, who were state champions at the Junior Classical League Convention in Latin 1 and Latin 2. And what's distinguished about Kushbu is she's also probably the most outstanding Spanish student we have at the high school as well. So she's quite an accomplished young lady. And also thank Donna France and all the students who participated on the virtual enterprise team, which traveled to New York City and finished seventh in the nation, which was quite an accomplishment. International competition, I think there were about 160 schools competing, so it was a great year. Thank you very much for the opportunity to have our students recognized and our staff.
And I know I speak for the board, and especially those of us who are parents, when I thank every teacher who had any part in encouraging these people, because for many of them, this is the highlight of the year. Their activities are the most inspiring part sometimes of their school year, and I know that a lot of extra hours go into supporting them and traveling with them and encouraging them, and there's many highs and lows along the way. And thank you to all the advisors who worked with the students on that. Thank you also for letting me come in late and join you in time to hear from Karen Lopez about PBHS, California Continuation Education Association Exemplary Program.
Thank you. I think that you already know, because we've shouted it from the rooftops, that we did get model school, model continuation high school for the next 5 years, and we were one of 18 schools this year in 2006 to receive that. And we do have the plaque over there and a display over there, so at the break if you'd like to take a quick look. But in addition to that, we also entered one of our programs that we've done, that Pacific Beach High School has done over the last several years. You have to have a program in place for over 2 years to enter it into the exemplary recognition program. And I'm going to introduce once again Melissa Newman, who has been instructed.
You would.
give me the microphone and then you'll have to drag me away. I think it's important to recognize that this is separate from model schools. This is a separate honor for Pacific Beach, and the first time we've attempted or entered. Applied for exemplary program, and Karen's passing out student career portfolios. This is a activity that every senior completes before they graduate. And if you look at the front covers, they're all different. I work with each student individually, and they reflect something about their career goals or personality. And then every student gets a packet that looks similar to this, that's a set of instructions that they go through. And inside each of your sample portfolios, there is a description of the model program that that we wrote up. And I don't know if you've got the descriptions of the other model programs that were awarded this year. But I think probably the most important piece, I just want to take a moment and also let you know that the display, the model school display, is student-generated and student-produced. And there's also a poster over there somewhere that describes the career portfolio piece. probably the most, the easiest way to understand the portfolio is if you look at the, if you look at the page that looks like this, and most of them have signatures on them, and what this shows is that students need to complete a whole series of activities, and then they end up having contact with every faculty member with for some part of the portfolio. So it's a great opportunity for students to interface with all of the faculty, and then they complete a product that they're proud of, that's personal, that's individual, that has all their information that they can use for school or employment applications and activities. So we were honored that we were acknowledged in that way. Thank you.
Thank you. And I'm just looking at the self-assessment and feeling so good about what I'm seeing, because one of the items is my confidence for success in life beyond school is strong. So they're thinking about life beyond school in this, and that's fantastic.
Yes, they have a future plan that they have to write out that's part of that. I also want to...
Acknowledgement of our retiring employees. Rick Robinette.
Before we begin, there is somebody I know who won't be recognized as a current retiring employee, but I see that Ted Wheeler, one of our former board members, is here, and so I'd like to say hello and welcome Ted. You're never a former teacher.
Tonight we have the opportunity to honor, thank, and celebrate individuals who are retiring from service from San Luis Coastal. As I look over the list and looked over kind of profiles, we are recognizing tonight close to 500 years of cumulative service to our school district. Not by any one individual. This is it's kind of a bittersweet time for me, because so many of these people that I have come to know over the years and have worked with, the thought of not seeing them on a regular basis next year is hard for me, but I can't seem to get the grin off of their face when I talked to them over the last month. We're going to have their principals or supervisors come up and say a few words about the... we only have about half of the individuals here tonight that some choose not to be embarrassed or profiled in front of the board, and we have others who have other commitments. But those people that are here, I'm going to have their principals or supervisors come say a few words about them. And we have a little token gift, a little crystal apple to honor their years of service. No golden watches or anything, but a crystal apple. And so, first of all, I'd like to have come up Dr. Jim Skoulas.
Thank you, and good evening. It is my distinct pleasure to stand here with Betty Landino. Words really can't capture a teaching career, as you know, but hardworking, creative, caring, high standards, student achievement are some of them that would characterize Betty's career. She has taught for 17 years, coming into the teaching profession from private industry. She started at Paso Robles School District. A pleasure to work with you. She's reading recovery trained and reading recovery service. And I also, in addition to missing her, I'm going to miss her husband, Michael Landino, also known as Dr. Science. At our school, and her friend, also Glenda Boatman, who used to come all the time. I wish her the best of luck in her future endeavors. I know she will be in Bhutan soon, along with Michael. And send us a postcard.
I will. Thank you, Jim.
Thank you.
Good evening. I'm Don Nicholson, the principal of Bishop's Peak and Teach Elementary School, and it's my pleasure this evening to present three very special people to you, three people that I've had the privilege to work with for the last 4 years. So if I could get my three people, please, to come forward. The three people stand. Rick mentioned missing people, and I have standing here to my right, my right hand, my left hand, and my right foot leg. I'm going to be a loss without these three people. To the far right is Mrs. Lucy Martin, our secretary clerk. In the middle, Mrs. Marilyn Fuller, our school secretary. And to my immediate right, Mr. Stan Johnson, our head custodian. It will be a very different place at Bishop's Peak Teach Elementary School without these three people. As a staff, we've celebrated Lucy, Marilyn, and Stan's retirement, as well as the retirement of one other staff member, one of our teachers who could not be here tonight, and that's Mrs. Nancy Holland, who will be retiring after, I believe, it's 38 years of teaching. We've celebrated once already, and there will be a community celebration tomorrow evening. That tells you how much each of these people means to many in the Bishop's Peak Teach School community, and how grateful we are to them for being the special part of our lives and the lives of our children that they've all been for many years. Her work record tells us that Lucy came to the school district in 1984 and worked for us for 3 years as an attendance aide, and then was hired and worked as a merit employee for the next 19 years. She's retiring this year after a total of 22 years of service to the children of our community, leaving us, as I said, as our secretary clerk. She's been as our famous school secretary. She's worked at Bishop's Peak, Pacheco, and currently she's retiring from Bishop's Peak Teach Elementary. She is also retiring after a total of 22 years of service to the students and our children. Stan came to us in 1971. He started as a custodian, split between the old Teach School and old Pacheco. He went to Los Ranchos in 1974 and then to Bishop's Peak in 1980. He's retiring from Bishop's Peak Teach after a total of 35 years of service to our school district. A little known fact is that Stan followed his father into the school district. Stan's father was also a longtime employee of the school district who retired after, I believe, head of maintenance. Was that his title?
Yeah, maintenance.
We all know, however, that the work records are just the facts of employment. And while impressive with these three people, they don't tell the stories of who these people are and what it is that makes each of them so very special and what will cause them to be so greatly missed by those who know and work with them. In respect for the large number of people who are being recognized this evening, we have to keep things short, keep our comments brief. But if I had more time, I would tell you a little bit about Lucy's warm and caring manner and how much it has meant to the children and adults she has had contact with over the years. I would have you roaring with laughter from the stories of how Marilyn never has, there's a never dull moment with Marilyn, no matter what's going on in the office or at school. And I do my very best to try to tell you how Stan approaches everything with his good-natured attitude and how much his presence is a part of Bishop's Peak School and how much it's meant to so many children. Lucy, Marilyn, and Stan share the common bond of careers dedicated to working with children. In their different roles, they have always been great role models for any student. They've actually been great role models for everyone with whom they have worked. Everybody at Bishop's Peak Teach wishes them all the very best as they move into their well-earned retirement, but they will be very greatly missed. Lucy, Marilyn, and Stan, once again, congratulations.
Thank you, Don. Who's up next?
Pat was there. Not to be deterred, she kept on going, later transferring to Cal Poly, where she was one of seven students to graduate with a brand new major to the school, child development. Patty graduated from Cal Poly on a Saturday. The following Monday, she was off for a two-year internship with Cal Lutheran College in Bakersfield. This was an innovative program that took students fresh out of college and put them into the classroom teaching.
After just 1 year in this program, a man named Dr. Newman came knocking on her door asking her if she wanted to interview for a teaching job in the city of San Luis Obispo. Soon after the interview, Pat was offered the job, but she wasn't really sure if she wanted to leave the bustling Bakersfield for that little cow town of SLO. So he gave her a week to think about it. A few days later, as the story goes, he actually showed up at her classroom back door to see what he could do to help her get out of her contract. He did everything but get down on her hands and knees to figure out what it would take to get Pat to come to San Luis Obispo. Finally, she agreed and has been with us ever since. She started out at Emerson School as a first grade teacher. During that first year of teaching, her principal, Mr. Lacey, brought in a new volunteer to work in her classroom, a newly widowed lady by the name of Wilma Miles. Mrs. Miles ended up volunteering, then aiding, then volunteering again in Pat's classes every year from 1971 to 2005. Wilma, now 97 years old, and I spoke on the phone yesterday. She describes Pat as a loving and dedicated teacher and a pleasure to work with. She adores you and thinks of you as a precious friend. 3 years later, Patty Foote became a Title I teacher for Hawthorne and Emerson schools, followed by a transfer to Morrill Elementary, where she taught a whole variety of grade levels. She was later transferred to C.L. Smith to teach fifth grade. She arrived a month early, got her room all set up, ready to go, taught for a week, and then due to enrollment changes, was transferred over to Sinsheimer School. No problem, she's a survivor. She stayed at Sinsheimer School for 3 years until she came back to C.L. Smith. In 1996, Patty started up the Title I program for Smith. She did this for 3 years before returning to the classroom until this year, where she capped off her career returning to run our Title I programs as well as for Hawthorne School. Pat is most proud of making a difference in the lives of so many, and husband Bob is that they both enjoy a well-deserved, relaxing, and healthy retirement.
Congratulations.
Kathleen Settle, where do we begin? After completing her degree as an art major and teaching credential at University of California, Santa Barbara, Kathy got her first teaching position down in Huntington Harbor back in 1969. At about the same time, her UCSB sweetheart accepted a teaching job up north, Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. This was a problem for the young couple. So just after 1 year, Kathy left Southern California and headed north to be near Allen. Teaching jobs were scarce, so she subbed for a while before landing a job in Paso Robles, where she taught pre-first and second grade. Kathy married that Allen in 1971 and soon was hired by Principal Ed Riley to teach sixth grade at Smith. She taught for 3 years until the arrival of her first son, Scott. She stayed home with Scott for 1 year before accepting a fifth grade position at Del Mar. When her second son, Matt, who's here with us tonight, was born, Kathy was done with teaching, resigned to be a full-time mom. She got involved at C.L. Smith as a parent volunteer from the day Scott entered kindergarten. In fact, and this is important, Kathy held every single office PTA had to offer except for president. She served on the school site council, coordinated carnivals, and organized membership drives. As her boys grew older, Kathy was ready to get back into the workforce. She became a Title I instructional aide at C.L. Smith and later subbed in the district. In 1985, Kathy was one of 16 candidates that applied for a sixth grade position opened up when Herb Alloway moved up to adult ed. Part of the interview process including performing a demonstration lesson for a panel. As the story goes, Kathy called her good buddy, Laura Boyle, who helped her prepare a dynamite math lesson that knocked their socks off and landed her the job. After a half year at sixth grade and 1 year at fifth grade, Kathy ended up in third, where she has taught ever since. Kathy first attended a student study team meeting many years ago as a parent seeking help for her own son. She later volunteered to work as the chairperson of the team. Of her many accomplishments, Kathy is most proud of her leadership on the student success team. Kathy understood how important it is not to be judgmental, but to help parents help in terms of understanding children's learning difficulties. She is a great listener and able to provide support and ideas to help parents struggling with their children's academic or social needs. Kathy is also very proud of her family and looking forward to spending more time with them, as well as having time available to get her sewing room organized, continue her sewing and quilting projects, take art lessons from her son, Scott, attend Matthew's graduation this Sunday from Cal Poly in history, travel with husband Alan. She'd better hurry up, though, because as I mentioned, Kathy did hold almost all positions on our PTA, but come August, she will be C.L. Smith's new PTA president. So we're very proud to present Kathy Sell.
Good evening once again. It's my pleasure to have the opportunity to honor two of our retiring teachers who are with us tonight. And so first of all, I would like to ask Tom Dimmitt to come up front, please. Tom? This is a tough one to take because Tom and I are the same age, you know. And, Tom has been a teacher in the San Luis Coastal Unified School District since 1973, so 33 years of service to our school district. Started out at Laguna Middle School as a math and PE teacher in that year and came to San Luis Obispo High School in 1982. During that time, he has been a math teacher, a social science teacher, a dean, a coach, and an athletic director. And over the last 20 years, Tom has distinguished himself as the athletic director at San Luis Obispo High School. As they say, the tall tree catches the breeze, and in his position as athletic director, I know that Tom has caught the breeze on many occasions, sometimes a gentle breeze, sometimes a strong, hard wind blowing, but he has done a great job in that position, and if you followed the success of our teams over the last 20 years, you'll know what a great job he's done. This year alone, our teams won to me as both as a teacher and as an administrator and now as principal. My first year as dean at San Luis Obispo High School, Tom said to me, just remember this, every time you sit down to have a conversation with a student about any matter related to attendance or discipline, for good reasons or bad reasons, you have an opportunity to build a relationship with that student. And that has stayed with me ever since and become one of my mantras as an educator and a school administrator. And I thank Tom deeply for giving me that information. I transferred that into a phrase that I use, which is, you know, we're building bridges, not burning bridges. And I thank Tom for giving me that inspiration. I've asked a few of Tom's peers and colleagues to contribute a few words to his being honored tonight, and here is what a few of them had to say. Bruce Tadone, who said it's not easy to just use a few words because he's Italian, but he said that Tom has been equal parts my counselor, confidant, friend, administrator, boss, and role model for how a teacher and coach should be at San Luis Obispo High School for the last two decades. I was fortunate enough to have won the one and only CIF tennis championship for the county of San Luis Obispo, and the folks at CIF took a picture of me holding the trophy. In the background is Tom. I've always felt that that picture is a perfect metaphor for my life at SLO High School. I've had some success, but I know that behind it all, there has been the support and the human goodness of some fine people like Tom Dimmitt. Rick Ernstrom, our highly successful swim coach for decades, eons, words to describe Tom: dependable, consistent, fair, supportive, encouraging. I could always count on Tom looking out for our programs and making sure we had what we needed to be ready to compete. And when things got difficult, he was very supportive and encouraging to me and our team. And finally, from Gary Etheridge, who's coached many sports at our school, he remembers the first words that Tom told him when he started coaching at San Luis Obispo High School. In order for us to compete in our league, we need to outwork our opponents. And I think if nothing else could be said, and many other things can be said about Tom, I think that is what distinguishes him as an educator, that he has outworked virtually everybody for 33 years and done an outstanding job along the way. So congratulations and thank you to Tom Dimmitt.
Just want to say that I, 33 years, it's been seven very excellent principals, seven very excellent superintendents, and triple-digit board members who have all...
The Mount Baldy Open. And so next I would like to recognize Pam Orth. If Pam would come forward, please. I don't know where to begin with Pam. Actually, before I earned my teaching credential, I had to do an observation at San Luis Obispo High School in an English class. And so I had the good fortune to draw Pam's class for my observation. And when I walked out of that classroom, I thought, oh my gosh, I just don't know if I'll ever be qualified to do the kind of work that I just saw. And lo and behold, here we are 20 years later, and I have the opportunity to honor one of the most outstanding teachers that I've ever known, ever met, and probably ever will meet. Pam has been teaching in our district since 1971. She started at Slo Junior High School, which doesn't even exist anymore, in 1971. Prior to that, she taught for 5 years, so Pam has dedicated 40 years of her life to teaching. She, at San Luis Obispo High School since 1982, she's taught English and newspaper and a variety of levels of English. What can I say about Pam? You may remember a singer from the 50s and 60s, a jazz singer. His name was Mel Torme, and he was always referred to as the singer's singer. Ladies and gentlemen, Pam Orth is the teacher's teacher. There is not a teacher in our district who could find a better model than Pam Orth if they were looking for someone to emulate. The words that I would use to distinguish Pam are class, style, gentility, quiet passion, and extraordinary dedication. And a couple of Pam's colleagues also contributed comments. Pam has been my friend and mentor. As a new teacher, it was comforting to have Pam help me over the rough spots. I always say that I wouldn't be here today if it weren't for Pam, and those are the words of Elder Avery. Also, one of her colleagues, Ivan Simon, had this to say about Pam. It is no coincidence that the letters that make up Pamela Orth can be arranged to spell O Earth Lamp. For years, the best part's still coming here. For years, Pam has been the guiding light for the English department and for her students. As an earth lamp, she has been our grounding. And
all the kind things that people have said to me as I walked in tonight, I really appreciate it. This has been the best career I could have had in the best place I could have had it. Thank you. Wayne Brown, would you please join me? It's my honor to talk to you a little bit about Wayne's World. We're looking back over 30 years, and Wayne's World is difficult to capture. Really the essence of this exceptional man. He's done so many things well for our school district, but we have time just for a few highlights. Wayne started in 76 at Morrow Elementary School, teaching all grades but kindergarten and second grade. He went on to Sinsheimer, which was his home for a couple years. Then he was selected, picked out, the cream of the crop, to coordinate the Professional Development Center in 84. So for 4 years, he coached principals, teachers in the art of instructional delivery, and supervision. We all received 5 days of in-service and had repeated follow-up conferences. He was patient and kind, and he guided us to look forward to what true learning was all about. We gained from his wisdom and his insight, and we appreciate that, Wayne. In 88, the superintendent came to me and he said, "Hey, I've got this guy, Mary. Can you turn him into an administrator? I want him to be a principal." So he had the opportunity to work with us at San Luis High School for a year as a dean. What an experience. What an experience. And that assignment as a dean prepared him for an administrative assignment at Bishop's Peak School. Then from there, the superintendent had another great idea. He decided that Wayne should coordinate the reading recovery program for the school district along with Kay Emmons. So he took his family for a year to Cal State San Bernardino and became certified to enclose the school with great care and attention, and we appreciated his professionalism during that year, Wayne. Then again, back to reading recovery as a teacher on special assignment. And to the present, Wayne's world is made up of reading recovery. Through his leadership, knowledge, skill, sense of humor, he's created a community of learners centering around impacting the lives of students with one-on-one tutoring and instruction. To think about it, the impact is overwhelming. It would be interesting to do the math. Over the last 14 years, taking the number of teachers he has trained, multiply that by the number of students served, plus the number of students served in the classroom settings by each of the trained teachers, multiplied by the years the teachers have taught, probably equals hundreds, if not thousands, of students who have been affected by his instruction. Can you imagine the difference he's made in our school district? Wayne's professional world has created a community of learners, teachers, who provide early intervention for our most fragile readers, who teach strong and hard day in and day out, who expect literacy success for all, and always keeping in mind the individual student's life. There's no turning back once you go through that door as a literate student pursues his or her dream. And we want to thank you, Wayne, most importantly, for what you've done to make that happen. Wayne's world has left a professional legacy which has changed the lives of our staff and our students, and we are forever grateful. We want to thank your family, too, especially Peggy. We have some flowers for her tonight. For her tireless support over the years. You've made a difference in our school district, Wayne, and we thank you sincerely.
Thank you so much, Mary. I'll just take this opportunity to thank the leadership of our school district, both the current leadership and past leadership, for the opportunities I've had to serve the children of our community in so many ways. It's been a long, strange trip, and I thank you for it.
Mr. Miller. The word professional. He stands and delivers day after day. Ed calls him the man most of the time in our discussion. So let me just give you a brief overview of his history in our district. He started at Los Ranchos School in 77, teaching fourth grade. From there, he went to Sinsheimer, where after 2 years, he became the principal of the school. That was the year that I came into the district as a principal of San Luis High School. So we established kind of an affinity right off the bat, beginning principals, finding their way, kind of asking basic questions and trying to understand the answers together. I could always count on him. I'd just ask him to stand by me at a meeting or sit by me. So I knew he was there to provide support and always an opinion and a lot of time constructive critical advice. I knew I could count on him. From 83 to 91, he served as the principal and then accepted a 2-school assignment, including Hawthorne School. Heck, he could do anything, right? He delivers. When the challenge came to look at the needs of our students in our school district in 92, there was an opportunity to create a school addressing the needs of our expanding Spanish-speaking population. He became the principal of Pacheco Elementary School with the commitment to provide our students a school where they could become bilingual and biliterate in the course of their elementary school experience. Heck, this meant he had to learn Spanish. So no matter, summer after summer, he attended summer language school in order to be able to converse with his population. He delivers. He speaks Spanish, even sings in Spanish. So isn't that amazing? Look at this guy. The sky's the limit for him. That's the commitment that he made. He's able to converse with his students and parents, and actually, after 14 years, the school is an established model in the dual immersion programs in the state. He and his staff delivers. He follows the school motto, results, not excuses, is up on the wall in the multipurpose room. He expects results from himself, as well as his students and his staff. His first class of students has matriculated to the high school program, realizing Spanish 4 level classes as ninth graders. His kids deliver. His staff delivers. He gets results. The school is operated on a 5-year federal Title VII grant with exceptional evaluation reports from our His dad's advice to him at a very early time in his career was, be the best at what you do. I'm here to say to you, Jim, that you followed his advice well. You're the best teacher, principal you could be for your staff and students in your schools. You've delivered.
It's okay.
I'm proud to stand by you and call you my colleague and friend. Thanks to your family, especially June, for her support. And all we can say is you've stood up and you've delivered. You've created a legacy that has brought this community together. And we thank you for the example you've set for all of us.
Thank you, Mary. Just hope you remember all this when you do my evaluation next week. That would be marvelous. I just want to tell the board that for the past 23 years, sitting through a number of principals' meetings and listening to either the superintendent or the assistant superintendent talk about some kind of a new program that's been thrust upon us by the state or the feds or some kind of an impending budget crisis or something like this, you know, we all sit there with glum faces, and they get down, and I look at the person next to me, and I go, oh, my Lord, what are the poor people doing? And by that, I mean it's been a real pleasure, just to echo what the other retirees have said, to work in a community and a school district where you can get things done with great quality. And I've always felt very fortunate to have the opportunity to work here and serve the board, the district, and the community. So thank you very much.
I would like to also mention to the board and the public that we have several individuals who could not be here tonight or chose not to be here tonight, but I'd like to acknowledge them and read their names of other retirees. From San Luis Obispo High School, teacher Hal Belch, Maida Redfield, and Patty Zamzow. From Los Osos Middle School, who's having an awards ceremony tonight, two teachers, El Nicoli and Ruth Martin. From Pacheco Elementary School, Shirley Durant, who we honored at our last meeting as a clerical employee of the year. From Bishop's Peak, as Don already mentioned, Nancy Howland. From our Transportation Department, Carol Pierce. From Laguna Middle School, Linda Rain, an instructional aide. From Transportation, Roger Redfield, one of our longtime bus drivers. From Food Services Department, Pat.
And I'm thinking about what each day the teachers meant, the staff meant, the administration meant for my daughters when they came home and said, I learned this, or they did this, or I spoke to so-and-so, and it meant so much. So I also want to say for the students, really, who have been touched so much by everybody who's here tonight, thank you for all the service that you've given, because it meant a lot to my daughters, and I'm sure to other students, too. Thank you.
Please, everyone, feel free to help yourself and to circulate, and we'll be in recess for a while. AGP, are you ready? Great. I would like to thank all of you that stayed to honor the people that are retiring and apologize if we didn't get around to all of you. There's always time pressure on this night because of the budget adoption and some of the other items that coincide with this. I wish we could have a longer reception, but thank you to all of you for staying and thank you for your service. Next item we're going to look at is just the correspondence from the president of PFLAG, and they had requested to come and talk with us again at some point, and I think Dr. Valentine has spoken with them about that. Is that correct?
I have. The request still stands. We've offered time with our administrative staff if that would help, and the board can provide direction about the request to speak to the board.
Okay. I know when we talked about it before, it sort of seemed that it would be helpful for them if they want to work with the administration, and we would ask that you do what you think is appropriate on that, unless anybody has any more specific direction. Okay.
Excuse me,
Mrs. Botwin?
Chris, I did give you one, my response there. Did you pass that on to Ed? Okay, thank you. That's fine.
Okay.
If I could clarify, the response was to allocate a 10-minute time slot for a public comment. Again, I'm not sure which public comment is typically a 3-minute piece. And the board's direction on that.
I don't have it written down. I gave it.
All right. Sounds like the consensus is to handle it that way, unless Mrs. Roger had something different to offer.
I just want to say that I'm in support of 5 or 6 minutes. I will stand with Mrs. Botwin on that.
Okay. Thank you. We have public comment next. Do you have any requests, Chris?
Mr. Buckman?
Thank you very much. Kind of hard to speak tonight after all of the other nice things that happened. I had a nice thing happen as well. As 2 weeks ago, as secretary of the Tri-County Education Coalition, I did get to go to Sacramento, partially on your behalf and on the public's behalf. And this is the third year that I got to lead the group into the governor's office. And this group consists of administrators, classified employees, school teachers, and parents. And we get to go into the governor's office. The first year I did it, I was very scared, and we met with a gentleman named Paul Navarro. The second, and Paul was very nice to us the first year. That was 3 years ago, right after the governor was elected. The second year I got to do it, we met with Paul Navarro, and he was a little testy. This year, we got to meet for the third time, and it was Mr. Navarro, and he was very friendly again. So, no value judgment on that, but it was very interesting. We took 3 points in with us. The first was that we need to make the financial impact on declining enrollment districts to soften that effect somehow, because unlike San Luis Coastal, other districts, when they face declining enrollment, are hit very hard the second year, and it causes a great deal of crisis. The second point was that more money is needed for teacher, classified, and administrative staff development. It does no good to have us help teachers and classified become better at their jobs and not help administrators. And so we wanted to get that across. The third was very interesting for me because the group came up with a term that I've been hearing a lot used by your board, which is to close the achievement gap. And so we took that message to the governor. And the third, I think, was the most important message, and that's if you're going to send more money from Sacramento, then let the elected officials decide what to do with it and cut the strings that Sacramento keeps attaching to it. So if there's anything that I can take as a message from this group, from your board, or from the public.
McConnell met with a group of local educators from the Tri-County Education Coalition of Ventura, Santa Barbara, and San Luis Obispo County. So that was nice recognition as well.
Okay, thank you. Any other public comment? Then we'll move on to reports. There are no student representatives tonight, but is there any school staff that wishes to make a report? We've heard from a lot of the sites already, so that'll take care of that, and we'll move on. Status of the state budget. Mr. Miller.
Well, in keeping with the theme that Mr. Buckman started, we have had recent developments within the legislature where they've taken on hearings about the governor's proposals for the budget. And one of the key areas is they are parting ways with the governor is over the allocations of money for specific programs, especially the music, the PE, the music equipment, and the PE equipment. One of the proposals that the legislature is providing and has voted, both houses actually in favor of, is to grant school districts $1.2 billion worth of a grant that we would be able to spend on an unrestricted one-time allocation where we would want to go. And that would be in opposition to or not in support of the governor's proposal for the music, PE, and the equipment pieces. So that is a cutting of the ribbons and the ties that bind the money a little bit. If the governor goes for that during the negotiations about the budget, it could be substantial dollars for all school districts throughout the state of California. And then just a second item that I would point out for everybody's watchfulness is that the federal government has started to chip away, and maybe chip is too small of a word. They've really taken a hammer to a lot of programs that have been embedded in school districts for a long time, Title I and other types of low achieving and low socioeconomic status student programs. And recently, they had a major effort to cut the MAW money, which is a Medicaid-supported program. And Jackie was showing me tonight that there's a news item that just came out today that not the Senate, but the House of Representatives has voted not to support that. So they are in support of continuing the MAW allocations. That's really big for us. And then on back to the state side on our mandated costs, there is a continuing bubbling up of controversy about how mandated costs will be looked at and paid into the future. Even though it's a constitutional guarantee that we will receive reimbursement for state mandated programs, they have ceased the flow of money. They have instituted some very onerous audit procedures, which find 85% of all claims not to be valid, which is far in excess of what the IRS would ever do to us, but it is very, very onerous in that practice. And so there's a lot of bubbling up about mandated costs we'll keep you informed about, because that is a huge dollar. It's $1.2 million they owe us as of right now, and it's a $400,000 a year item for us that we expect to be paid for, and yet the state seems to be going in a direction not to provide us with the revenues.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Miller. The next thing is also related to funding, and this is our public hearing on the budget. And we're presenting this for the public to comment and give us any input prior to the board taking action on the budget. I will open the public hearing for comment. And I don't see any public comment. Unless someone comes forward, I'll close the public hearing. We have had input before and have been working on this for several meetings, so we're ready to take action tonight, and it has been put in here with the summary that was given to us before. There have been a few changes, I think. Do you want to highlight that, Mr. Miller? Or Dr. Valentine, whoever's presenting this one?
On item four, the 2006-2007 budget adoption, there are no changes. I think on item five, there may be some different changes. But in the presentation of our budget, we're still proposing that the board adopt a budget which reflects a summary, a surplus of $1.2 million. And would allow for the strategic plan to have sufficient funds to do some adoptions in the board's interest. So at this particular time, we would just recommend that the board adopt this budget and move forward in the process.
Okay. That's right. The changes were previewed by Dr. Valentine last time in terms of how we were going to deal with special ed. So does anyone have any questions? Mrs. Botwin?
Yes, I want to also, first of all, I want to apologize to the board. I've limited my questions and honed them way down because I missed the last board meeting. We were in Greece and, believe it or not, doing some wine tasting, which was quite marvelous in Greece. I tried to watch the board meeting of the 16th on charter. And finally, I ended up last Sunday, the Sunday we came back, and I called our purveyors of our film here, video, AGP, and nobody answered. It was a holiday weekend, and so they did call back the next day. Then we had that Tuesday night meeting, and I said, would you please? They said, we don't have charge of how often the film is shown. You know, I want to see the 16th, and I need to see that too. And so they suggested that I said, well, how about if I buy it and you send it to me? And they said, yes, that's fine. So they sent me a copy, and the copy I received Monday in the mail, I was already sit down and look at it. It was a copy of the meeting last Tuesday. So that was fine. What I did, I sat down with the old board book from that meeting, and I went through it every line. I went through the budget, which I have here with me tonight. So bear with me. I've limited my questions down a little bit. I have two of them, several of them. Ed, first of all, on page 4.3, we have under general information, we have elementary music and the PE programs, and they're going to be, as you show later on, they're going to be 1 year only. They're going to be budgeted 1 year at a time.
This is something a little bit different. Russell. This is our unrestricted lottery budget, and this is how we're spending our $1 million worth of lottery money. So the lottery funds are budgeted as follows, and in there is this the continuation of this year's elementary music program. And it is a one-time allocation, as all lottery revenues are.
Right. The problem I have with that is the term one-year allocation. These are ongoing, right? But we're just putting them in this in order to use the lottery money. Is that correct?
No. No, lottery money is money that we receive on a year-over-year basis, but none of it is guaranteed and none of it is consistent. We average $900,000 to $1 million a year. And this is how we have proposed and recommended the board adopt the budget for the lottery revenues that we're expecting to receive.
Okay. I'd like
to... Can I ask
you
a quick follow-up question about that?
Yeah, I'm not finished, but go ahead.
Before we leave it, though, I thought at one point we waited until we actually accumulated the lottery dollars
and then
we budgeted them.
You're
so
right.
Is that what we're still doing?
Yes.
Makes me very nervous that we have two of our most vital programs on a year-to-year continuum.
If I may, through the strategic planning process, we established a list of priorities that came down from a variety of constituencies that we shared with you. And we also started with a prescribed dollar amount that was in that $800,000 kind of range for ongoing dollars. In bringing forward the recommendation, which, by the way, is item number 5, which is the recommendation, but in bringing forward that recommendation, the $800,000 of ongoing money was focused on the Closing the Achievement Gap programs that are listed in that. We recognize the board's interest in the music and PE program, and that appeared in the one-time the recommendation for the use of one-time dollars. The program last year for music and PE that was adopted by the board was essentially a staff development-based program where a specialist would come in and then the classroom teacher would work with the specialist and pick up skills with the notion at some point in time that the classroom teacher would become more independent with that and perhaps take over the program. We would suspect that at the end of this year, if the board has an interest in either music or PE as an ongoing expense that we could then introduce it at that time. The other thing is that in the governor's proposed budget, there are categorical dollars which are specifically targeted to physical education and targeted to the arts, which would be ongoing. And depending on whether the strings are cut or not, those dollars would be dedicated categorically to music and PE and are probably in a sufficient amount to fund those programs.
I understand everything you're saying, but at the same time, it really doesn't make fundamental sense to me. I'm looking at page 5.4, and I'm seeing under the infrastructure that we have $168,000 allocated for our infrastructure on one-time money. Now, that is clear to me. And then I look down and I see music PE. Okay, these are the arts. And I see primary music and primary PE comes to $249,000. Okay, approximately $100,000 more than the infrastructure. And I find those extraordinarily vital to what we're doing in the school. I look back on the other pages, and I see the same kind of thing. I see on page revised May 16th on page 5.2, reading recovery, late bus after school. Then I see some of the closing of the achievement gap. Then I see some of those categories. I'm just disturbed that we're putting all of these things, many of these things recommended here are very good, well done, well organized, plotted out. But I dislike very much our having two of the most, not the most important, but two of the very important areas being put on a one-time money. And then we go back to page 5.1. In 5.1, future priorities, all of which I agreed with. There was no problem with that. I was very comfortable with that. But on number two there, the first tier of funding to be used to provide trained paraeducators to assist in the implementation of high-impact individualized education plan. Okay, that's a future priority. That cost, as it is, as it look now, that cost about $106,000. But on the next page... Okay, that's primary. That's right on the kids, a hands-on, in the classroom. Here we are. And on page 5.2, we have the student service coordinator. That's $104,000. Okay, we've got the student service coordinator, and we've got the paraeducators. Yes, I know there's a difference there. But I'm thinking in terms of the direct student work there, the direct student contact, the paraeducators should come first in closing the achievement gap, and then maybe next year we put the student service coordinator on there, which would not have as much impact on the individual, in the individual classrooms, on the individual students.
Again, that's a point of conversation that the board would have an opportunity to engage with when this item comes up. I would add, though, that the student services coordinator is a position that we brought forward in response to, number one, maintaining program quality for our students across the school district, and number two, when looking at the field of special education and recognizing how many dollars leave the school district on the basis of litigation issues that occur related to IEP development and the management of IEP programs. It is staff's belief and recommendation that the establishment of the student services coordinator to oversee those things will actually result in savings to the district and reduced litigation costs.
Mrs. Botwin, you've raised one issue, and are you comfortable with having comments on that issue, and then we'll take the next issue, or do you want to raise all your issues before the rest of the board?
Actually, as I said, thank you, Madam Chair. I honed my issues down to the ones that were, I thought were paramount to me.
Okay.
And again, I read over everything, so I'm not prepared in doing this. And I always read over everything, even though sometimes it doesn't stay very long. I do read everything over. I think that's a hard thing, Ed, to decide. Would the student service coordinator be more benefit for the students or having the paraeducators? And that's an issue there. That's which one would be more important for closing the gap right now, as opposed to the same cost, 104 and 106?
And they're back-to-back in terms of the recommendation.
Yeah.
We moved the resource specialists into the first, not into the first tier, but into the recommendation for ongoing classroom support and in direct response to the board's input. We do believe the student coordinator is vital, and we also believe that the next dollar that comes in ought to go into the program you just described.
So, Mrs. Bowen, are you comfortable with hearing from other board members on those suggestions now? And then if you need to come back and follow through, we'll come back. Mr. Millar?
I think the concern regarding the funding from the lottery proceeds, it doesn't concern me in the sense that you're funding important programs with one-time allocations, one-time money, however you want to designated, because if by some outbreak of something or other in Sacramento they do away with the lottery monies, then we will have in our next budget building session the opportunity to find an alternate source of monies. It doesn't mean we care less about the program on an ongoing basis. It just means that's where we've identified the dollars that we're going to support the program for in this year's budget. I don't really expect that they're going to get rid of the lottery proceeds next year. And so it doesn't bother me. And in the other issues, I mean, I'm sort of editing myself right off the bat, but what I was going to say is we are not doing either or. We're not saying $104,000 for the resource coordinator or $104,000 for paraeducators. We're going to do both. Now, whether that's the best bang for the buck vis-a-vis classroom hands-on kinds of things, or, I mean, dollars are fungible. So if we're saving thousands of dollars because of our, I always get the name wrong, student services coordinator assisting us in staying and delivering good services for special education students, and at the same time making sure that we're doing what we need to do right, those are fungible dollars. So if we're saving them in one place, they're available to be used in the classroom and other places. So it's, I think it's a distinction that, while I understand some of your discomfort with the funding parts of this, I think we probably are going to be okay in moving on past that. And if especially if music and those other programs come up next time and we've lost the lottery funding, then, boy, I'll help you find funding for them. And I think the rest of the board feels the same way, too.
Okay, Mrs. Roger?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, Caroline, that initially I was concerned, and I was concerned about funding the student services coordinator and putting the resource specialists into a lower tier. But since we've now found a way to bring the resource... the resource... teachers, the RSP. I think what we're doing is fully funding one at each school. Is that correct, Ed? Okay. So then that, I was much more comfortable then with the student services coordinator and upping the resource people and having the paraeducators in what might be considered the next tier down if more money comes up. So there really is money touching the kids in the form of the resource specialists.
Okay, thank you. Dr. Valentine.
One brief correction. It's a full-time resource at every elementary school. Pacheco would have a half-time resource specialist because that piece fit appropriately at Pacheco, but the general concept of one at each side is there.
Mr. Unger?
I see that that item number four is an action discussion item, and I believe since we did discuss it last time that it would be appropriate to make it an action item. So I would move approval of item number four, the 2006-2007 budget adoption.
Second. Motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mr. Spadafore. Any discussion? Mrs. Roger?
I just had one comment, and I'm happy to vote to approve the budget, but As usual, I would like to take my hat off to Kathy Hunter, who does all the real hard work of crunching the numbers. And every year that we approve the budget and we walk to our cars at the end of the meeting, I just see that it's a huge weight is lifted off of you. Not to detract from your contribution, Mr. Miller, at all, but I need to acknowledge you, Kathy. Thank you.
And he would be the first one to do that if Mrs. Roger hadn't already done so. Okay. Any other comment?
I just wanted to add something to what Ms. Rogers is saying, that Golda Meir once said that if you want something said, you ask a man, but if you want something done, you ask a woman.
Okay. Well, we've got a motion and a second on this item. I don't see any more mics down. All in favor of adoption of the budget, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? It passes 6-0. All right. And then we have the future priorities in the next item, and that's number 5. Does anyone want to present that to us?
Actually, item number 5 presents the entire superintendent's recommendation, and at the board's request, we gave a kind of roadmap for what a staff recommendation would be if additional dollars were available. There are 6 tiers there, and again, I would emphasize that the fifth priorities. The fifth item deals with essentially saying, let's wait and see where the categorical dollars for the arts and PE come in. And if we get ongoing funding, it's even better than lottery money, and it would be specially designated for that. The other priorities, I think, are fairly self-explanatory. This budget is really a budget that's focused on a concept, and part of the concept is that as a school district, we would look at our most critical needs and funnel our resources in a focused kind of way to make a big impact on identified areas of needs. This would be in contrast to providing a lot of dollars or a few dollars to a lot of different areas and maybe making little bits of difference here and there. The concept of strategic planning is to really take these resources and strategically apply them to a whole problem and try to seek major solutions. So the recommendations for the future include, first of all, that any funding that we would approve on additional dollars that would come in would be associated with a plan that had student outcomes or some kind of objective associated with it. And so rather than start with a dollar amount and end with a plan, that we might start with a plan and then request a dollar amount as a result of the plan. That takes a little longer, but I think in the long run, it creates efficiency. Already indicated is our second priority is we want to bring paraeducators into the special education classroom. Our third is that if there really are additional ongoing dollars that come in, if our critical needs are correctly identified, perhaps our first step would be to revisit those critical needs and say what is our next step in those particular areas. I've indicated that the funding for English learners covers a certain segment of our English learner student population, but it by no means covers all of the English learners, and additional resources would be very useful in that particular area and would probably be the recommendation we would bring forward. And we also have identified in the year one funding certain items that we're virtually certain are going to be high priorities in year two. An example, we're funding a launch of the AVID program in year one. It makes very little sense to launch the AVID program in year one unless we commit ourselves to funding in year two. Secondly, as mentioned tonight, Pacheco Elementary School has been funded by a Title VII grant for 5 years. That grant is running out, and yet I think that program meets a very important need for our English learners in our community, as well as those English-speaking students who are working to become bilingual in Spanish. And it was an extremely high priority for everybody involved, not for this year because the Title VII funding is still there, but for next year when that funding is anticipated to be gone. We might do well, knowing the uncertainty of
budgets from year to year to hold something in reserve for those absolutely essential pieces in year two. The next priority was simply again, the categorical music and PE. And then finally, not to rule out any idea or emergency which may come up in the next year that would compete for funds, whether they were ongoing funds from this year or whether they were priorities for next year, but just to make sure that any new dollars that come in compete with these commitments and either be sustained as prevailing over the other competing interests or else to be placed on a list somewhere further down.
Question, Dr. Valentine. These are listed, you know, just because you can't put them all at once, but if I'm correct, number four, for example, isn't necessarily the fourth priority that set aside for the second year of Avid and Pacheco would not be number four. That would be sort of a given that just happens to be expressed as number four. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think that's accurate.
Okay. So it's not exactly a lockbox, but something like it where the money's put aside and it's sort of earmarked for those.
If I could, I think item number four is really a subset of item number three, which is to revisit our priorities.
And then as far as number six, all new ideas compete with those listed above. I just want to know if secondary counseling, where it says not this year on page 5-4, is that a new idea that has to compete with those listed above, or is that somehow covered in any of the previous items?
It was listed as a future consideration and ideas for the future on page 5.4. It's about four items up from the bottom. Consider the role of expanded secondary counseling. It would have to compete. I would add also that there are categorical dollars targeted to counseling in the governor's budget, too, that might lead us in that direction.
Okay. So that could sneak in under number five rather than as a new item?
It definitely. If we got categorical funding specifically for counseling, it would.
Not just for secondary.
Or if it is tied to number one, the objectives and priorities with the other programs.
Right. And,
okay.
And we would say any idea would have to
have to do that. Okay. All righty, then I have my questions clarified. Do you want just direction on this, whether the board can buy into these concepts? Is that what you're looking for tonight?
I think we're asking for approval of the whole package, including the original superintendent's recommendation, which is on the next several pages, the one-time expenditures, and the future priorities.
Okay. So would anyone else like to have questions answered or make a comment on that? Mr. Spadafore?
Yes, thank you, Madam President. Item number five is the result of many hours spent in correlating information from the different sites and from the administrators and meetings that we've had here on several occasions, and there's been changes that have been made, which everyone here on the board has had an opportunity to discuss. And I think it represents the best interest relative to students and programs that we can implement. The one thing that I was going to ask if the board is in favor of this is in recognition of what Dr. Mitakiewicz is doing with community members relative to standards-based visual arts and additional counseling at the school sites, especially K through 6, that if categorical funds are not allocated, because we don't know what the political process will bring us down the road, that it also be listed, that standard-based visual arts and additional counseling at K through 6 also be listed under ideas for the future with a TBD after it, so we separate it from just categorical funds and that we continue to work with the community to establish other programs that may benefit our students, even if categorical funds do not become available.
Okay. Does everybody understand what Mr. Spadafore has requested? Is that something that everybody's comfortable with? Okay. Then the next comment might be Mr. Unger, and then I'm just going to work down this way. I don't know who was next, but Go ahead, Chris.
Two things, actually. The first is, as I stated earlier, Mrs. Dickinson was unable to attend the meeting, and she did send us an email, and I promised her that I would express her opinion on this. And she states that if there is more money, I would strongly support making the elementary music and PE positions and programs ongoing. I hope we can do that. I also hope we can expand the art and music program in the budget for 2007-2008. And so it sounds like the discussion we're having is fits in with what Mrs. Dickinson's desires are. The other thing I wanted to comment on, and I think I need, we'll just echo sort of what John was saying. When I look at this budget and when I think about where education is going, I think that the overused term achievement gap is something that we really do need to focus on. I was reading in the paper this morning about the possible Supreme Court decision, for example, regarding affirmative action. And if the Supreme Court comes down on the side of merit, strict merit, as opposed to opportunities for those who may not have had opportunities, I think that we even more are obligated to our students to give them every chance they can to compete with other people in California, and the only way we can do that is by educating those folks who are at the most risk. And I see those people, the most risky people, and I think our student data reflects that, are kids who are in poverty, our special education students, and our English language learners. And I think this is a budget that supports that. It obviously, it's not perfect from my perspective. And I will say, Caroline, I was opposed to the student services coordinator for quite a while. And I did express this to the board last time. Prior to the last meeting, not the meeting where we chose Mr. Peter, but the meeting before that, we received a letter from a parent with a copy of a letter that an attorney had written. And that was my tipping point on this one. And that's when I decided to go ahead and absolutely support the student services coordinator and that position's value to the school district.
Chris, if I may add to that for just a minute, Madam Chair. When I was going over the budget that Russell so easily wrote up for us and set here this mammoth folder, which is wonderful, the legal fees I saw for special ed went from, they have quadrupled. They were like 93,000 2 years ago, and then I think it was up to $200,000 last year, and this year it's up over $300,000, or within that area. Russell, is that sort of like? And when I saw that, I realized, okay, I heard you guys before, and I had hoping that we could somehow avoid all that, but apparently there really is some legal problems, and we need that person. It's not that I'm against that person. I'm hoping that if we have enough people in the classroom, that's not going to happen. It's going to control that from within instead of having have somebody coming down from above. But yeah, I understand what you're saying.
I think it's probably a function of both providing the services in the classroom and then making sure that the service provision is within the legal requirements.
If I may just jump in on that point, I do think the board needs to be prepared for the possibility that we add this position, the person works diligently and does everything just right, and we do everything just right in the classroom, and we're still going to have escalating legal costs. There's a limit to what we can do. One of the things I want to compliment the education folks in our district about is every time we've talked about this issue, they've had the focus rightfully on providing the fair educational services, appropriate educational services for students. I do think that's where we need to keep our eye on the ball, but I think this is a good addition. I'm going to be watching it closely just because I'm uncertain yet what it's going to really get for us, but I do think it's something that we need to do at this time, and I agree with Caroline that escalating legal fee dollar sign, and Chris, the letterhead we saw in that one item you referred to did it for me.
Okay, thank you for that on that issue. Mrs. Roger, did you have another issue, or do you want to move on?
Well, I wanted to piggyback on something Mr. Spadafore said, which was quite a while ago. If in talking about counseling through K-6, I hope that my repeated requests to beef up counseling have not been interpreted as only secondary counseling. We're building this house from the ground up, and I've always been talking about elementary as well as secondary, so I just wanted to clarify that. And then the other thing that I was wondering, and this is a little bit off, but I'm going to ask it anyway. We're on page 5.3, closing the achievement gap for English learners. I keep seeing this Rosetta Stone software, yet I don't know anything about it. And I'm wondering, is this something new we're bringing in, or is it in place in any of our schools where I could go and see it in use?
Yeah, it's in several schools. Del Mar, I was at today, and was talking with Mr. Schellenberger, who was sharing the use of this particular program, which provides an opportunity for kids to work on language acquisition independently using technology, and it's very highly engaging for students, and he spoke very highly of the program.
So I could call Mr. Schellenberger and maybe arrange to go and see it? Okay, thank you.
Mr. Spadafore?
Yeah, Madam Chair, I'd like to make a motion before the board that this board adopt the year one budget allocations totaling $854,500 from ongoing funds and $814,600 from one-time funds. Further, be it recommended that the board adopt the future priorities as listed above, with the addition that under ideas for the future, that we determine what standards-based visual art programs and additional counseling can be created and introduced in our school systems beyond that which we already have.
Thank you. Does everyone understand the motion?
I do, and I'll second.
Second by Mrs. Roger. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Passes 6-0. Thank you to everyone that participated. And whoever wrote the budget message, this is a great piece. I thought that was Ed. Did you write this, Ed, the budget message? Whoever, listen, they're all trying to give somebody else credit for it. It's a brilliant explanation of the school district budget. I wish I'd seen this 5 years ago. Is it? I would recommend keeping that in every year because it just really explains to a new board member what the budget is.
Whenever you said great, I always want to attribute that to the superintendent, so that's why you got the credit for it.
So you did that one, Russell. That's great. It's so clear, and it's so absolutely the balance between flexibility and planning that the budget really has been for us, and it's great.
I would only add that as Kathy Hunter does all the hard work for Russell, that Russell does all the hard work for me.
All right. Great. Okay, thank you, everybody. Mrs. Botwin.
I want to say thank you, for allowing me. I've only missed one board meeting this past year. One board meeting, and that was in the 30th. And when your husband's paying your way to take a really nice trip, damn, you better go along and not...
So, if he wants to pay for me, I'm going too.
No, but I was enough expense. But anyway, I want to thank you guys. I honed it down, did everything I could, and you were very gracious about letting me say my say and discussing it, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. We're glad that you were able to, even without the benefit of the tape. Mr. Millar, did you have something? Okay. Then we'll move on. Move this big book over to the side. And item... 6 is the Medi-Cal Administrative Activities Update. Jackie Kirk-Martinez.
Hello. Good evening.
You've got help.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm standing here. Yeah. Thank you. At the request of the board, I'm here tonight to talk about MAW and the status of the addition of the Medi-Cal Administrative Activities, also known as MAW. And we have a saying... during Ma week. So here we are mawing today, and have you mawed today, and are you mawing tomorrow? And then they come and they ask, what does Ma stand for? And so we have a quarter on the table to remember Medi-Cal administrative activities. In your packet, I have enclosed a description of the history to date. The graph demonstrates that with the expansion of the MA participants and the focused support of the medical of the MA clerical support that we added roughly around between February and March during the third quarter of 05-06, we've already seen an increase in the billable hours. Those numbers on the graph stand for billable hours. We are able to enter information consistently, and to begin maximizing our billable hours through personal contacts one at a time when those charts come in, the tracking forms come in. We also have developed MA quick guide fingertips codes, because that's the hardest for them to understand is what do I do, when, what number, and I just did something and I know that's MA. And so every participant can keep this in their back pocket or on their clipboard, and it gives them the code and specialized information instead of going back through their huge packets. So this was a great addition. They were very thankful to receive this. In addition, at the request of the job-alike personnel, such as the psychologists, the counselors, the principals, the secretaries, we provided to them a very nice bright pink sheet of their job-alikes, and so with the codes and activities that they can question themselves, did I do this under 8? Did I do this today? Did I do this yesterday? Such as make a follow-up Medi-Cal referral in a student study team meeting. That's a code 8. So all principals across the district have this, and they're able to increase their billing times and codes. They were very grateful for this. Everything in MA in our district is pink. So when they see pink, they think green, because we have been bringing in more money. So the colors coordinate together. I know that the Mr. Miller has already spoken a bit about President Bush wanting to cut Medicaid and Medi-Cal, and we're following that very carefully. What we do is we only spend as the money comes in, and because the money comes in very slowly, we are at least 1 year in arrears of getting the money, and so we have last year's 04-05 still to get, and then we've already billed for 05-06, and so we are looking at 2 years still of being stable. The clerk, Dawn Stout, has done a tremendous job on making those personal contacts, keeping things very consistent, and so that we don't have concern in 3 or 4 years with any audit trails or audit paperwork. It's very systematic and organized. Do you have any questions?
Thank you, Jackie, for the information you gave us. It was very definitive. It makes it very clear that we did the right thing, that MA is going to pay for itself. Would you just keep us surprised when the money comes in, how much comes in, and that, in fact, we do have that position is paying out of its own benefits?
Absolutely. I will give that information directly to Dr. Valentine.
Thank you.
Mr. Millar?
Thank you. I just want to say that way back when this was first discussed, I think it was Dr. Olker, and it might have been Mr. Unger, and I thought, this is pie in the sky. And I have to say that the first year or so was a little rough, and a lot of, I understand there was some grumbling by some folks, but I really like the way you and Ms. Stout have sort of made it a user, maybe not friendly, but user compatible experience. It's nice to see the billable hours numbers increasing steadily with each quarter, and it's great to see an idea come to fruition and have staff implement it as well as they have. I appreciate it. And thank you, Mr. Unger.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And then the next item, which Mr. Robinette will help us with, is the credential waiver.
And it's recommended that we take action to approve the notice of intent to employ these people on the basis of credential waivers.
Thank you. The one of the challenges we face sometimes is changing rules by either the No Child Left Behind Act or the Commission on Teacher Credentialing. And the commission at the end of this month is virtually doing away with all emergency permits for teachers, which we rarely have used, but many districts depend on that for hard-to-fill positions as they're kind of bridging, filling those positions. There are some alternatives to the emergency permit, though, and we have in front of you for your approval, and this is actually a public notice and a request for approval, for a credential waiver for two individuals in our school district that work within the special education program. One of whom is a longtime employee and working with emotionally disturbed students and has done that most of her career, but is still working on the credential specific to that. She has a special education credential and has had one for many years, but is working on the specific credential for moderate severe students. And another is a new program specialist that we have hired with a history in working with autistic students, but is also working on, I believe it's a mild moderate credential for her. So what we're asking is to apply for a credential waiver while they complete their education program. They're both taking coursework. They're both expected to finish, and we are requesting from the state, from the Commission on Teacher Credentialing, that we waive the credential requirements for the year as they complete their program.
So you're just asking for our approval to submit that application?
To submit the application to the state. The State Board of Education, or the Commission on Teacher Credentialing, will meet in August,
okay,
and they will have this in front of them in
All
August.
Right. There's no downside to doing this, is there?
I don't think there's any downside. I think it's actually the best option we have to keep these individuals employed with us.
Okay. Anybody want to make a motion or ask a question? Or
question. I would like to express our gratitude to Terry Chapman and to Julie Kragenbrink, for doing what they're doing, besides doing apparently an excellent job in the classroom. They are taking classes during the summer and night
in
school.
In a big way, yes.
Hey, let's get a life out there. And you guys are wonderful, and thank you for doing this and going ahead to give us, being with us and then doing it and then going to get the credential for it. Thank you very much.
Do you want to make the motion, Mrs. Bowen?
Yes, I move that we pass the employment on the basis of a credential waiver for the year 2006-07 school year.
I'll second, but I have a question.
Okay.
Will the two persons complete their studies during the waiver period?
The credential waiver can be extended for a two-year period. We expect that will happen within the year if it needs to extend another year, and we will come back to the board if that's the case, because we're really asking for the 06-07 year. We rarely ask for emergency permit issues in this district. We're fortunate, but we would come back if they needed to extend that.
Okay, thank you. So there's a motion by Mrs. Botwin and a second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. Thank you. Next is the work year review for the PB administrator. Is that you too, Mr. Robinette?
Yeah, I think this is just a response to a request from the board in September. If you recall, when we approved a reallocation of the salary schedule for our administrative position at Pacific Beach High School, the board asked to revisit it at the end of the year to do a bit of a study to see if the 215 days that we had allocated was adequate for the job. I had the opportunity to review that with Karen Lopez, and the belief is this is a good standard, a 215-day standard paid at the dean's rate of pay, which is what the board authorized in September, and our request is to make this a permanent part of the MEC salary schedule at 215 days at the dean per diem rate of pay.
Okay, so we're just changing what we did to make it permanent.
Exactly.
Okay, any questions?
I don't have a question. I have a comment, and that's just that we've seen phenomenal things come out of PAC Beach with the several administrators that we've had since I've been on the school board. It's a school that we should be proud of, and I would absolutely support this. And if no one has any other comments, I would move approval of item number 8.
Madam Chair, if I could just add one piece to this.
number of work days in the work year is also a negotiable item, and I just wanted to remind the board that we may be bringing forward through the negotiation process some additional conversation of this that does not affect your action tonight.
Thank you. Okay, motion by Mr. Unger. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Passes 6-0. Next item is the Pacheco Alternative School waiver status. Dr. Matakovich.
Yes, Madam Chair. As you know, we have come to you 3 times now for consideration for alternative school status, waiver status for Pacheco School. Their last waiver that we that you approved ends June 30th of this year. In reviewing the pros and cons of applying for this waiver status, it's a recommendation of staff not to reapply for the waiver. The reasons for this decision primarily center around the fact that Pacheco Elementary School is a fourth-year program improvement school. It's anticipated that the waiver would not be accepted based on that fact alone. By not applying for this waiver, the only area to be addressed, which is the Ed Code section, would be the instructional program at the kindergarten level. In order to be compliant with the Ed Code, thereby not waiving it, the kindergarten program would need to be adjusted by teaching 45 additional minutes per day in English for 10 of the first 20 days of the school year. These 10 days are when the students are with their Spanish-speaking teacher. The staff is able to modify their approach, not break the code, and meet this requirement. There's also a provision under the waiver to allow students and staff to transfer to another school if they so choose. Without the waiver, students would still be able to transfer via our administrative transfer procedures and under open enrollment. Staff would follow the district's transfer procedures. So, in summary, after discussion with the site principal, the school staff, the school site council, the Department of Education, the district is not going to apply for a waiver for Pacheco School. Pacheco staff will adjust the kindergarten instructional program to meet the Ed Code requirement. So no board action is taken on this item. We wanted to have a discussion. We wanted to make you aware of our administrative decision.
Thank you. That was very clear. Mr. Unger?
Yeah, I will support this, but I just want to say every time I hear that Pacheco School is a fourth-year program improvement school, when in fact I think Pacheco has been demonstrated to be a model school, it makes my blood boil. And it's just another insult to public education promulgated by No Child Left Behind. So I'm going to go ahead and support this. I don't know if any other members of the board have any comments, but I would move, it's a discussion item.
Yeah, so. Just direct staff that we agree and that's a good approach. Mr. Millar.
Thank you. As I recall, when way back at the beginning of this waiver as an alternative school, it was actually to obviate the effects of the UNS initiative. Am I remembering this correctly?
Of Prop 227, yes.
Right, uh-huh. Right. That very mean-spirited interference with the way professional educators educate our children. And the reason I wanted to bring this up is I wasn't on the board the first waiver, but I thought I was really proud of the board in its vote to make the designation as an alternative school. So I guess to some extent I'm a little disappointed that we don't get to make that vote again, but it's an excellent program and I'll certainly go along with staff's recommendation on it.
Okay, thank you. And so that's a vote of confidence in the school and in the staff's decision. Next we go to the Del Mar drainage easement issue, and I think we have an extra paper from staff on that in front of us. Is that right,
yes.
Mr. Parker?
Madam Chair, Exhibit B was omitted from the package, and you have it at your desk.
The United Methodist Church, who is a neighbor to Del Mar Elementary School, is attempting to subdivide the rear portion of their property into seven lots. That property currently drains onto the Del Mar campus. That's the historical drainage pattern, but it's a field now, so it drains in sheet fashion onto the campus. The embankment that separates the school from the development and the field, proposed development in the field, has suffered erosion over many 20-plus years. The fence at the top of the hill is beginning to rotate down the existing, or rebuild the existing concrete drainage swale that serves both of our properties. And we think that it's a better solution for him and for the United Methodist Church, as well as his development. It's also a good deal for the school district because we get a considerable amount of work done for free. And should we decide, no, we're not going to grant this easement, they can still build their project, but it's not as good for the project, it's not as good for the school district.
So this is the classic win-win?
I think so, yes.
Okay. Questions, Mrs. Baumann?
Yes, Brad, I think it's a wonderful situation, but two questions. Number one, I looked at this and I looked at it, your diagram here. Where exactly is the... Where is the location here, the V-swale and the drainage area on this map? Where is it?
Talk us in, Brad.
Yeah, just talk
to us. It's in the northeast corner of the property, so along the eastern boundary.
It's right here. Right along here, there's a big slope. Right.
Okay.
Here.
Okay, gotcha,
okay.
Gotcha.
That's where the, okay, then my second, Chris just showed us what was here, and now I understand what's going on. My second question is, if anything goes wrong, who's responsible?
They're responsible to maintain the drainage improvements.
As Patty says, this is a win-win. Sounds good to me.
Madam President?
Yes.
I had a question for Mr. Parker. Not a question, just a comment. And when I read the draft of the easement grant deed, there was one area that maybe we as a district should discuss with our lawyers. Over the last 2 years, there's been a new public policy in construction situations that the owner of the property and the general contractor have to show that every subcontractor and every contractor has a current license and has sufficient insurance, both liability and workers' comp. If each contractor and subcontractor don't, then there's derivative liability to the landowner, which would be us. And I know in there is a hold harmless, but that's a general clause. And I just think it might be prudent to have the attorneys look at the derivative liability if the church doesn't make sure that everybody who works on that project has current licensing.
The embankment that you're talking about has some fair erosion in several of the spots. It's pretty steep. The swale that's currently there is overgrown, and so I think this is a great project. And from my perspective, and speaking with Mr. Schallenberger, it seems like also a win-win for us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Parker. I think that's it.
We'll make these corrections and return this to the board on the 20th.
Okay, great.
Thank you.
Item 12 is the approval of a proposed job description for the coordinator of student services. And we've had this before, have we not, Dr. Valentine? Did we get this description before? Oh, I missed 11. I'm sorry. Thanks, guys.
And aren't we into consent?
I believe we're into the action.
Okay.
So we just
I'm
brought
sorry.
It back
we just want to know. All righty. I flipped two pages. I'm already slipping up on the job, you guys. I will read the items for the consent agenda and let me know if you want anything pulled. Number 11 is approval of certificated and classified. Number 12 is the proposed job description for coordinator of student services. 13, acceptance of donations. 14, disposition of surplus property, and 15, approval. Pull 14 and 15 for Mr. Spatafor. And then 16 is purchase orders, 17, warrants and payroll, 18, instructional materials adoption for new and modified secondary courses, and that has the new info Mr. Unger requested on the headsets. 19 is the instructional materials adoption for high school health courses. 20, you'd like to pull 20, board policy on wellness. And 21 is approval to participate in community-based English tutoring, CBET, for 2006 and 2007. 22 is approval of summer study trips, and that's pulled by Mrs. Roger. 23, award of bid number 201 for roofing at Morro Bay High. Number 24 is action. So is there a motion to approve the items other than 14, 15, 20, and 22?
I move approval of items 11 through 13, 16 through 19, and 21 and 23.
Okay.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mrs. Roger. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Passes 6-0.
To remove the PCs that are listed in item number 14 comes into play when we had discussed earlier. We would attempt to start a program to retrofit these items and help the students that don't have PCs at home, and also to have students learn how to retrofit and upgrade PCs.
Nobody's here from that department, but does anyone here want to speak to that, or should we just pull that part of it back later?
You could do either. In this particular case, and I'm speculating to a certain degree, but I think this is generally what happens, is we accumulate these in a pile, okay, and they're outside. And what we are doing with these particular units are determining that they're not fixable. They've somehow lost their ability to function. There are some that will be obsoleted because of the software that they run, and can be, if we develop the program with the proper financing, be able to reload more current software on them. But I think that these are ones that have been out in the weather for a number of months, and it is now accumulated to the point that we have to get rid of them.
Are you comfortable with that, or would you prefer to just remove that part of it from the approval motion?
No. I accept what Mr. Miller, what Russell is saying about the condition of those. But what I would like, if there's board support, is that on an agenda item in the future, that someone from the appropriate department bring back information to us about what has been done to either conceptualize, discuss, or implement a program. So if these are salvageable, they don't sit outside until the opportunity to salvage them and reuse them is past, gone.
I would support that.
And we'll start to pay some attention to those that are salvageable and those that aren't, and try and separate them out. Just understand that if we do implement this program, it's going to have a fiscal impact somewhere. I'm not sure what it would be, but you know, some people, some parts and stuff like that.
You know, I appreciate that, and we'll have to look at that as a board regarding costs. But I would also suggest that as staff looks at this, that I imagine there might be some community businesses that would be willing to become involved with the district, who are also involved in this business, computers, PCs, and technology, that may help us.
We even have a program with the ROP to teach kids how to fix these things that might be applicable.
Thanks. So we're being purchased, and the numbers made me think about what has gone on before.
I believe at least some of the obsoleted ones are a result of our overhaul and our sinking fund decisions that we made. Yeah, and I kind of vaguely recall some aspect of the RFP being the disposal of the obsoleted computers by the vendor. Am I wrong about that, or?
Yeah, the disposal piece didn't come through. What we have is, we have a guy who really can take them off our hands very cheaply compared to the cost to dispose of the hazardous materials that are inherent to computers these days.
Then I would make a motion that item number 14 and 15 on the action consent list be approved with the modification that the administration bring back to the board by August, September, at a point, some initial outline of what is possible, what ideas can be generated, and a structure to begin working with the idea of providing these computers, training for their repair, and providing them to students.
Okay.
May I just interpose for a second? I think it would be a cleaner process if we just approve the consent items as they are presented and then get Mr. Spadafore's in the future agenda item when that comes up, and or instruct staff to provide it in the Friday packet or however we want to do it, but the future agenda, and just leave the consent items the way they are.
That's fine.
Yeah, that'll put a lot less detail in the motion, and I think staff is taking that direction anyway. Okay. The motion then is to approve items 14 and 15, and there's a second from Mr. Millar with the elimination of the detail about bringing the item back. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. Item 20, Mr. Unger?
Yeah, just really quickly, if I could refer staff to page number 20.4. Underneath the heading of classroom, which is near the bottom of the page, that sentence strikes me as kind of awkward, and I would ask that it be revisited for grammatical correctness. It says, the board strongly discourages school staff to use foods of minimal nutritional value, and it just doesn't sound right to me. So if we could, I think what we're, yeah.
Right of correction after the board adopts the policy. Okay. Do you want to move then?
Yes,
otherwise?
Absolutely. I'll make the motion to approve item number 20.
Second.
Okay, and thank you to staff for putting those changes in that we talked about the annual review and about the mandatory committee. So, motion by Mr. Unger, second by Mr. Spadafore.
I just wanted to say, if you put quotation marks, where did it go? There you are. I'm sorry. If you put quotation marks around of minimal nutritional value and move it elsewhere, as Chris suggested, there'd be no problem with that. It'll show that, you know.
Thank you. And we'll take a vote on the motion. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The policy passes 6-0. 22, Mrs. Roger.
Yeah. 22 has to do with approval of summer field or study trips, and I'm delighted to see that there are so many opportunities being presented for our kids over the summer. In fact, unless I counted incorrectly, there are 32 different field and study trips proposed, and I have no quarrel with the kids having the opportunity to do that. My question about this item has to do with my concern that out of 32 field and study trips, only 6 include girls. And of those 6, I have included co-ed, co-ed clubs such as FFA. So my question, I guess, on this would be, are there not opportunities out there being offered for girls? Or do we not have staff interested or available to take girls? Or are girls not interested in what is available? Why is it there such a disparity in the amount of offerings for boys and girls under this item? That's my question.
Great catch, Mrs. Roger.
Yes, what you have in front of you are the requests from the school side. It's initiated by teams as well as activities. So this has been at the school's initiation. Good observation. We have not pursued this question at the school level.
Does anybody want to direct Mr. Robinette as our... I think
yes,
it's interesting.
I
mean, I think Mrs. Roger really raised a very interesting question. There's no presumption that there's any violation, because if our teams have been brought into compliance, you know, that's one of the tests for compliance. But it raises an eyebrow for me. Thank you, Mr. Robinette. So you'll give it to Dr. Valentine, and he'll put it in the Friday packet. Is that the right way to deal with it, do you think, Dr. Valentine? Okay.
Okay, so that said, I'll move acceptance of item 22.
Okay, motion to approve by Mrs. Roger and second by Mr. Millar. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Passes 6-0. All right, we next have informational items and an advance agenda. We had something. Did you have something, Mr. Spadafore, for advance agenda?
The board self-evaluation, first of all. I'd like to suggest, if there's board support, to schedule it on July 18th. And along with scheduling it on July 18th, I'd like the board to consider, with staff's assistance, beginning it earlier than a normal board meeting. And I would suggest also that there be a moderator retained, so facilitator, so no one board member has to concentrate on running the meeting but can participate fully in the issues that will be raised, so that you don't have to wear dual hats, because I find it difficult. I also would like the board members, if we do schedule this on July 18th or some other time, to make their list known of areas that they would like to see covered in a board evaluation. For instance, myself, I would like to visit closed sessions, the guidelines that we use, and issues related to that. On study sessions, I'd like to recommend looking at those so we can talk about how they can be focused differently and how follow-up can occur. And on board member requests made outside of our board meetings, I would like to discuss methods in which the board may have an opportunity to have a second or a third to pursue a request, because I think at times there may be information that the board can discuss before a request goes out to the administration. So those are just some ideas, and I was thinking that I would recommend that we have a facilitator and we bring up issues that we might want to discuss at our evaluation. Thank you.
Some formal evaluation guidelines, and I know there are other boards that do this. I know CSBA might have some offerings for us as well, so that we know what we're looking at and we know what we'd like to see our product be at the end.
We do have a policy on it. We have a policy on board self-evaluation, and that may talk about the instrument. That may talk about the CSBA instrument. It might be a good idea to just start with a review of that policy.
And I'd like to support what Chris just said and add to it, actually. I'd like that we have a... We perhaps in a Friday packet we can get information on what other school districts use as their board evaluation and review our own CBS information that we had a couple of years ago on this. One more thing, though. I don't mind an moderator, thank you. That'd be fine, but I would also like us to add a small segment if the rest of the board would agree, and that would be, I've heard other boards doing this, the board's individuals' goals for the year and their responsibilities, what they think their goals individually, their goals and their responsibility are in being a board member. And apparently that's generated a lot of good discussion. So full support there, John, Chris, on this kind of thing.
Question?
Mr. Millar?
Are we going to do two meetings in July? And we're going to do the one meeting in July. And in the past, we have, and I'm not sure that this falls into that category, or into this category that I'm about to get to. But in the past, we've sort of avoided staff-intensive board meetings during the summer. And are we anticipating that this will not be as staff-intensive? But it'll be board intensive.
And it sounds as though if there's a moderator, it would not require much preparation from staff other than to give the board the policy as soon as possible so the board can look at it and see if there's anything else that needs to be prepared ahead of time.
First of all, it's going to be an open session.
Mr. Unger, did you want to use your mic for that?
Yeah, I kind of thinking about what you're saying, Marilyn. First of all, it's going to be an open session.
I'm using your mic, and you weren't called on, and we're not going to go back and forth.
Yeah, I don't think.
Do you want to be recognized, or are you still?
I was just going to say, because it's going to have to be an open session. Certainly, we can't
tell anybody they can't come.
Okay, so there's a viewpoint that it's an open session, and then Mrs. Botwin, did you want to express something else?
Yeah, I thought, Chris, that we worked that out the year before, that it would be an open session, as it has to be. In the past, nobody's ever come before. I can't understand why, but and that we did that on our own, and that was the purpose of it, that... Without the administration, and then afterward we reviewed it with the administrator.
Yeah, I'm thinking that we may need some support somewhere along the line. I'm thinking that this process, and that's why I'd like to see how other folks have done it, would be a board generated process with nothing else on the agenda.
It is a difficult thing to do, and what I'm finding just right now is that when we talk about it, it makes people anxious, and we're deviating from our normal thing of using mics and getting called on, and for that reason, I remember last time it was not a pleasant session. We do need help, I think, and I won't be here, so you guys are going to do what works for you, but as I recall, the one time we did it, it was not a pleasant session. And it has a tendency sometimes to get rather specific about people, and it's just really important that it turn out to be a positive thing. Mr. Unger?
Yeah, with the board's and with the board's permission, perhaps this could be something that Dr. Valentine and I could work together on, and then we could present a proposal to the board about, I'm willing to present a proposal to the board for various ways that we could do this so that we can get through it and have something ready to go on the 18th. Would that be acceptable to board members? And
will we be reporting the results of our self-evaluation to the public?
If it's an open session, I mean, they can watch it. We did not have it televised last time. Yeah, we had it as part of a retreat. It was not televised. Dr. Valentine?
Just that the concept that...
Mrs. Botwin? I mean, excuse me, Mrs. Roger.
I'm not sure what we came up with, so could I just have it outlined for me briefly, please?
What my thinking on it is that with the board's indulgence, Dr. Valentine and I would, because I'm going to need some administrative support with this, that with the assistance of the administration, I would come up with some alternative ways of presenting and guiding board discussion for our self-evaluation that would help us through the July 18th meeting, and that we would present that to the board so that for the board's approval on how we're going to make this thing work. And I'm willing to take the lead on it just to do the legwork on it is all.
Okay, great.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Chris, that's nice and generous, and I know you'll do a good job, but I don't... We'll get you won't do the presenting and everything. No.
My intention is not to do that. My intention is just to do the legwork so that we have in place what we need to have
we
in place.
We get some ideas and we can look at a Friday packet. Thank you.
Yeah, just
Thank
to have you. Things work smoothly.
Okay. Anything else on that? On the advance agenda? Did you get all your concerns handled, Mr. Spadafore? Anybody else? Okay, then we'll move on to just informational reports from board members and district administrators. Mr. Unger?
Well, I just wanted to say I had the wonderful opportunity, and thanks to the board for allowing me to go to the Distinguished Schools presentation down in Anaheim, and I was accompanied by Dr. Matakovich. We absolutely one of the best experiences I've ever had for Sensheimer, Del Mar, and as Distinguished Schools, and Morro Bay High School as a Blue Ribbon School nominee. We were in the very front row. We were within spitting distance of Jack O'Connell. Great food, great entertainment, a wonderful opportunity to recognize the Distinguished Schools of California, and we were front and center for that. We did see Dr. Ladd there, and Dr. Ladd sends his regards to everybody here in San Luis Obispo.
Great. Anybody else? Mrs. Bowen?
Last Wednesday, I did go to the, along with Ed, I met Ed out there at the Bellevue Santa Fe Elementary School open house, and it was absolutely. The second thing that was just a matter of interest, when we were in Greece, we went to a lot of places that were, they were not tourist places at all. And whenever we got stuck, because between us we had about 15 words in Greek, and if you want to try to learn a language, don't try Greece. Oh, it was one little word that says thank you is F. Winsterstool. I'm losing it already. Yes, F. Winsterstool. I'm sorry, losing it already. But anyway, we had to find, we eventually got to places where there was no English at all. Restaurants, wineries, and all over the place. I mentioned the two most important. But we finally looked around and found people that were under the age of 30. And we'd find a young person and ask if they spoke a little bit of English, and they would help us out. And it was great. And, I, you know, thinking about it afterward, for them, learning a little English was wonderful because on one side they have the Balkans, and the other side they have Turkey, and the other side they have Italy, and then they have the ocean. So it was fascinating to see there were enough young people there that helped us get through it. And God bless the young people more than I've felt before. Anyway, thank you.
Dr. Valentine?
I just had a quick item, Mrs. Andrew, and I wanted to thank...
Go for it, Mr. Millar.
Wanted to thank Mrs. Botwin for going on vacation so that the alternate to the ROP could fulfill his raison d'etre one time each year, and it was a great meeting, had a lovely lasagna, and we had a presentation, I wish I could remember the teacher's name, the Royal Grandy, on the ROP... architectural drafting and CAD and animation programs, which were quite remarkable, and the ability to place the students who've been through these programs, particularly architectural drafting and drafting in general, is amazing. Mrs. Botwin is very highly regarded by the ROP folks, so when you accept the job as alternate, you'd better be on your toes. But thank you for letting me attend.
Dr. Valentine?
Yes. Number one, I concur with Mrs. Botwin on the pleasure of visiting Bellevue Santa Fe. The Bellevue Santa Fe PTA is represented on our PTA council, and I'm just the future of the exam, which will be tested in court in the middle of the summer. And finally, received some contact from the Office of the Governor, who would like to visit one of our elementary schools on the 14th of June. That's still in the works and not confirmed yet, but we've certainly made ourselves available if that materializes. There was interest in visiting campuses where music and PE were taught, and we're very proud of the fact that we have those courses that are taught. And probably, if it occurs, it'll be one of our San Luis Obispo sites of Los Ranchos, Sunshine, or Hawthorne, one of those schools yet to be determined if this comes forward.
Okay, so we're going to be a photo op, I guess, for that. I did talk to Mrs. Dickinson via email, and she couldn't make it tonight, and she asked me to bring up something. I don't know if it's quite within the bounds of what we usually do or not, but out of respect for her, because she's not feeling well and because she asked me to, I would like to bring up that she's concerned about some proposed legislation that would affect access to the internet, and urges us to all do our homework and investigate that, and if we desire, communicate as individuals with our legislators about maintaining neutrality on the net. And I know there are things floating around on the internet about that right now, and she would like to see that all of us, because we are interested in education, do our own homework on that one, rather than have a board take a position on it. So I'm putting that out there for her. And the last thing I had hoped to do was to introduce Dave Peters, but he was here earlier and had to leave, and he was introduced at the beginning. Oh, good. Well, see what I missed? I did come late tonight because of the awards that were given for the SLO High students in community service. Each year, I think the number of students that meets the minimum requirement for that recognition grows, and the City Council welcomes them all every year and thanks them for their service to the community. And I just like to add my thanks to all of them, too. And if there's nothing else, does anyone wish to make the Olker motion?
I have a question.
A question.
Is this your last meeting?
No.
Oh, good. I move adjournment.
Motion by Mr. Millar, second by